And so now that we've kind of given an overview of what we've seen and what's kind of led to this public creep into private company deals, I'm going to ask Jenny to discuss a little bit about what we've seen in indemnification and the rest of the panelists to chime in on their experiences on rep and warranty insurance.
Thank you, Kim. So back in the olden days, if you were doing a private M&A deal, the traditional source of recovery to a buyer for breaches of reps and warranties was seller indemnification. And depending on the nature of the seller, depending on the financial wherewithal of the seller, that indemnification was often backstopped by a holdback or by an escrow. And I would say what practitioners thought of as the market for an escrow was around 10% of the purchase price. What we've been seeing over the last few years is more and more private target M&A deals getting done on a public company basis. And when I say public company basis, what I mean is either very limited recourse against the seller post-closing or absolutely no recourse against the seller post-closing. And just to give you a little bit of context, as Kim was saying, this whole thing started in the private equity space, and it was fueled and made possible by the use of rep and warranty insurance. PE shops were selling portfolio companies. They were not interested in parking money in escrows. They wanted to distribute the proceeds to their partners. They had very, very limited appetite for post-closing contingent risk. And so they were demanding rep and warranty insurance from the buyers of their portfolio companies. Since they were familiar with the product, in order to be competitive and to have a strategic advantage in auctions, they started offering no indemnity deals. And they were deploying rep and warranty insurance when they were on the buy side too. And then as we had a very frothy, very competitive M&A market over the last few years, strategics, in order to stay relevant in those auctions and to be competitive, they were also compelled to start utilizing rep and warranty insurance. So I think it's fair to say the penetration of rep and warranty insurance is highest in deals involving sponsors. I've heard Aon, which is one of the big brokers of rep and warranty policies, they would tell you that the penetration rate there is somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 to 80%. It's still lower in deals that are purely strategic to strategic. There it's 15 to 20%, but that's where the growth has been and where they expect the growth to be. So Aon told me that in the policies they placed in 2018, about shy, just under 40% were placed for strategic buyers. And as you would expect, you see in the data bears out what we've seen in practice, but indemnification escrows are declining both in terms of duration as well as in terms of size. If you look at the JP Morgan study, I think it's quite illustrative. If you look at deals that closed in 2015, the median percentage of purchase price placed in escrow was just shy under 10%, which again corresponds to the 10% I told you we thought of as market for an escrow. And then you fast forward to deals that closed in the first half of 2018, that percentage drops down to 3.6%. And I'm not a betting person, but if I were to place a bet, I think when they get a readout for the newer vintage of deals, for the 2019 deals, that percentage would be even lower.
And Christina, just to touch on that point, do you think that the reason we're seeing that decrease is that there are still escrows and people are kind of using this mini indemnity structure?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of deals that are pure clean walks.
Right.
Increasingly more so, right, which is a beautiful feature in terms of streamlining negotiations. Of course, whether or not you can get the recourse out of the rep and warranty is a different question.
I think one of the challenges as a strategic and a seller, it really depends on who your stockholder base is, but you don't have the same arguments that PE does that, hey, our fund is closing and so the money's going to be gone. And so even if a buyer agrees to a large-scale rep and warranty insurance policy, as issues come up in diligence, environmental issues or sufficiency issues, these sorts of things, they can still push to say, hey, look, there's a finite set of buyers or sellers here. They should still be on the hook post-closing. So I do think strategics still face a little bit of a challenge that, but they're clearly trying to push the market so that even private deals are done on a public style basis.
Yeah. And just to echo one thing that was said, I would say like maybe 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, there was a pricing disparity between the rep and warranty insurance where the seller had absolutely no recourse and the rep and warranty insurance where the seller had some skin in the game. And by some skin in the game, think very little skin in the game. Usually it was under, you know, like 1% was the limited seller recourse. Now, the market has become so competitive and there's so many carriers vying for the business that that pricing disparity has virtually disappeared. So today you can buy a policy where there is no seller recourse. You have a synthetic double scrape of materiality, so all the materiality references in the reps and warranties are read out, and that policy would cost you virtually the same as a policy where the seller has some recourse. But that policy gives you just so much more advantage in a negotiation with the seller because they're just off the hook, it's a clean walk. The negotiation of the reps and warranties is very smooth, and you're able as a buyer to get a much more robust set of reps and warranties than you would if you were insisting on some limited seller recourse. So that has been a beautiful feature of the market that has pushed the private M&A space more in line with the public M&A space.